I have a theory that everyone's born with 100 points, and how you distribute those points is up to you, and you kind of figure that out along the way. And so if you min-max yourself, you put a bunch in one territory and very little in others, you're completely imbalanced, but you may do something exceptional.
All right, welcome back, or welcome to the Finding Mastery podcast. I'm Michael Gervais, and the idea behind these conversations is to learn from people who are on the path of mastery to better understand how they organize their life, what is it that they do to be extraordinary. And then we also, in some podcasts, we want to understand the craft, the thing that they've studied most and dedicated their life to, because that craft has a direct relationship to all humans. And in this podcast, it's exactly that. Finding Mastery is brought to you by listening. This is exactly what their app does. It helps you listen to books and content that you might not be able to sit down and actually have the time to read. There was a time in early in my career where I remember sitting in the back hallways of my university and being in the library for hours, reading all of the sports psychology literature and research that I could get my hands on. I loved it. I cherished it. The field of sports psychology is just absolutely on a bender right now. It is growing so fast. It is nearly impossible to keep up with all of the research that's coming out. So that's why I love what listening is doing. It's a game changer for me. So the listening app, it lets me listen to anything that's in writing while I'm on the go. Everything from academic papers to books, PDFs, web pages, articles, anything that I put in their app, it reads it to me. It narrates to me. And plus their AI is great. The way that the interface sounds, like, of course, it's not a human that's reading, but it kind of, the AI is so good of what they're doing. It just works. And then there's also this note-taking function. They know that people like us like to take notes. And so it's as simple as when I hear a key idea, I instantly press a button and that section is saved. They've done a really nice job with this product, and they've got a great offer for us. Usually they only give a 2-week trial, but because you are listening to Finding Mastery, you get a whole month for free. Check that out, a whole month for free. So I want to encourage you to go check it out. listening.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get started. Again, it's listening.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get 1 month completely free. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Hims. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing simple, convenient, and affordable access to science-informed treatments for erectile dysfunction, known as ED. They also are servicing hair loss, weight loss, and more. Health struggles like ED, they're common, but they can be hard to talk about when it comes to finding a solution. That's why Hims has been a game changer for so many men. The entire process is 100% online. Answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option for you. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free in a discreet package. No waiting rooms, no pharmacy visits, and no insurance is needed. Plus, you can manage your plan directly on the Hims app. You can track progress and learn more about your conditions and how to treat them from leading medical experts. If you or a loved one has been struggling with ED, I really want to encourage you to go check out Hims. I know ED often has a psychological component to it as well. So be sure that you're stacking some psychological best practices into your daily routine. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/findingmastery. That's Hims, HIMS.com/findingmastery for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/findingmastery. Disclaimer, hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. Now, this conversation is with Chris Talley. Chris is flat out my go-to for all things related to food science. We've worked together for a long time with hundreds of professional athletes and Olympians, and we worked together at the Red Bull High Performance Program when that was getting together. We're working together right now at the Seattle Seahawks and with handfuls of other athletes that are doing extraordinary, difficult things, including entrepreneurs and business executives. So it's been a real treat to learn from him. I use him myself. My family uses him. I can't give a higher glowing praise than that. His mind is, he thinks really clearly about very complicated things. And this is going to be a two-part conversation. In part one, you'll learn about Chris's journey, his work with NFL teams, Major League Baseball, NBA, tip of the arrow guys in every major sport, including the Olympics and action sports, and what is driving him and what has driven him to work so hard to be one of the best at what he does. And then in part two, we'll take a deeper dive into the mechanics of nutrition. And with that, let's jump right into this conversation with Chris Talley. What's up, Chris?
Mike, how you doing?
Great. This has been something that I've wanted to do for a long time. And why have you been ducking me?
I know. It's been probably 2 years or something that you've been trying to get me on here. So I finally, you pinned me down by putting it far enough out in advance where I was like, oh, I don't have anything on my calendar then.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah. So we've been friends for a long time. And I feel fortunate to know you in the space of high performance because you help the people I work with be significantly better. And that's by adding your lenses and your science and the art of food science to the equation. So today I want to understand at a deeper level, because we know each other really well. So this is going to be a tricky conversation because I want to ask things that I don't know about you, and just because we haven't gone there before or whatever. And at the same time, people need to know who you are that are listening. So this is going to be an interesting challenge, I think, for me in this conversation. So why don't we start with a simple question? Why food? Why the science of food?
It's funny. The initial interest there was more on the exercise side of things. When I was in high school and college, I was interested in putting on muscle mass, and I was trying different workouts, all those things. And then you start reading about nutrition. It was, the way a lot of people just kind of approach amateur athletic stuff.
Why did you want to put on muscle mass?
I was really skinny.
How skinny? Because you're built like a brick house. How tall are you?
6'2".
6'2", and then how much do you weigh?
235.
Yeah, and body fat, I'm guessing, is like in the in low teens.
Probably in somewhere.
So super lean, super great mass is what your frame looks like. Okay, but in college, you...
Well, it was more high school. I was 6'2", and at one point, 145. So that's... Mm. Pretty darn skinny.
It's really skinny. Yeah. Well, so, I'm laughing because compared to you now, it's hard to see that image. Okay. So what was that like for you? Tall and skinny.
It wasn't like I was getting picked on. It was just one of those things where I just kind of went, okay, this is not a good look.
How come
I didn't think it was a good look? Mm-hmm. A lot of the things that I like to do required a little bit of strength. And I, whether it was, I'm using an example, camping stuff or even working on a car, if you have to, if you're doing the high school and then college thing where you're modifying an off-road vehicle and you're moving 100-pound tires around, that type of stuff, it's not an easy thing for a skinny person to do.
So it was functional for you. It wasn't that you looked at Muscle Fitness, Shape Magazine, other athletes and said...
Maybe that too, but that wasn't the purpose. It was more functional strength.
Okay. In high school, were you wrenching on cars?
Yeah.
All right. And then... Why cars?
I thought it was fascinating. Actually, this is going to apply here, but I thought it was fascinating that you could take a car that was an average car, do a few things to it, and it performs at a higher level. And so kind of carried on to other areas. And now working with high performance athletes, that's the same territory, really.
Is that how you see the food science and the science and art of what you're doing? Is that if you manipulate... That sounds like a bad word. It's not a bad word. But if you change or upgrade or enhance a few patterns of eating or suppressing some cycles and activating other cycles, that you can get more out of the human experience for people?
Yeah, and that's one of those things that it's constantly evolving. Back when I was focused on the exercise part of it, I felt like I was starting to master that territory and... It got boring. I mean, it was one of those things where it's just the nuances between one workout and another workout and what it's going to do for you. It was not that exciting anymore. But the nutrition side of it, you know, if you could do a couple of little tweaks and get your body to produce more testosterone than what you would produce otherwise, and you're doing it in a clean, natural way, hey, that's great. And so that's really how I fell into the nutrition territory.
Okay, so let's keep going backwards. College and high school, non-functional body type, or not type, non-functional body structure. Is that fair?
For what I wanted to do.
For what you wanted to do, yeah. And then take us earlier into what it was like growing up and wherever you'd want to start. Take us there.
It was very typical, I think, just as far as a middle-class family, although, you know, looking back on it, maybe we were a little below that, just because, you know, if we'd go out to eat somewhere, that was understood that you do not order milk when you go out to eat, because that's going to get expensive, and what you pay for one glass is what you can buy a gallon of milk for, whatever, all those things that my dad would say. So, you know,
what did dad do?
He was a aerospace engineer.
Okay, and mom?
Housewife.
And how many brothers and sisters?
I had three brothers, no sisters.
And your placement is?
Oldest brother.
Okay. What was that like? Middle class, dad, aerospace engineer. So I'm guessing smart, thoughtful. Was he more linear thinking or more vertical in his thinking approaches?
I would say linear. It was a thing where, you know, there was that thing where he kind of wanted to be in charge of his domain. And so it was a thing where, you know, being the oldest brother, I was usually the one that fell in line. And then kind of as it went down the lineup, the behavior changed a little bit. But it might also be that I fatigued them enough that they adapted.
You have that way about you still. Okay, good. I'll explain that in a minute. Okay, so then what was it like growing up?
Boy, I don't have anything that was really out of the ordinary. I was an average student in high school.
I think anyone that knows you that maybe I've introduced you to or whatever would never believe that.
It wasn't because I wasn't smart enough to do things. It was that I had other things that I wanted to do besides homework. And so I just, you know, I would do enough to get B's and C's. And it was a thing where I just didn't put that much energy into homework. But it was, you know, if it was something else that I was building something or, you know, on the exercise front, that became a significant interest.
I love hearing that because it brings me some solace, like, because that was very much a similar experience I had, as we've talked about, that surfing was the thing that I was paying more attention to. And I ended up leaving high school not knowing how to study at all. I couldn't get into a four-year university because I didn't take the PSAT or the SAT. I didn't take any entrance exams. So I needed to go community college. And then I tested into remedial math and remedial English.
I didn't know that.
I know. This goes both ways for us today.
I know for me, I went to El Camino Junior College, and it was a thing where, you know, I didn't have the, I did great on the SAT, but it was a thing where it was just, I didn't even take any preparation courses or anything, and I didn't have the grades where I was, you know, friends were going to UCLA and Harvard and wherever, and I was just kind of like, well, okay, I'm still figuring out what I'm doing here.
I love that too, because you're, for sure, I consider you at the tip of the arrow for food science. And it's not, that's not just my opinion, but every organization that we've been part of together, they all nod their head like, oh yeah, Tally knows his stuff. Like, and they know their stuff. So to go from kind of bumbling in high school on an educational path and then be able to rise to the tip of the arrow in a complicated biological, physiological arena of chemistry is really cool.
And even in college, I got much better grades in college, but that was the thing where I think I was in a circle of extremely smart high school kids. Like, I was in the nerd crowd. And when I got thrown in with the rest of the population, it was like, wow, people really aren't that smart. Interesting how little effort I had to put in at the college level to get much better grades than I did. And I was in all the advanced classes in high school. I just didn't get good grades.
What's been the central question that you've wrestled with throughout the years, or central questions that you've wrestled with?
In what territory?
Well, I purposely left it. I'm glad you asked, because we can open it up to like questions about life, questions about people, questions about optimization. You know, I just want to, I actually just wanted to, it's not quite fair. I wanted to see where you wanted to go.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know. Questions. I don't know that I've asked that many questions of myself. Mm-hmm. I think as this conversation goes on, you're going to see I'm a very imbalanced person, but that's, I've come to embrace that. And it's a thing where a lot of people are seeking balance. And I know this is probably going to go against some of where you're normally putting people, but I
do ask that question about balance, and I'll make up a number right now because we haven't run the stats, is that 90%, 95% of people that have been on this, been in these conversations have no clue about balance.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't either. So, and I'm not sure, I don't know anyone that does. Do you?
I have what? Thoughts
like
on
balance? No, not thoughts about it, but like their life is in balance.
I think a lot of people I work with strive for balance. And in fact, if you go into Hollywood and you're dealing with all that side of things, everyone thinks that they're, you know, it's something they're on the quest for as far as trying to find balance. And I think at some point I actually thought, wow, that would be nice to have. And I tried to put a little effort into it. And I went, wow, that's a lot of work. And then I realized that if you're balanced, and this is going to go back to one of my early theories on people, but I have a theory that everyone's born with 100 points. And how you distribute those points is up to you. And you kind of figure that out along the way. And so if you min-max yourself, you put a bunch in one territory and very little in others, you're completely imbalanced, but you may do something exceptional. And so that's kind of where I've just embraced it and just gone, you know what, I did this to myself. There's areas where I have complete weakness. And, you know, as far as I think when you're looking for things that give someone a territory that they're exceptional at, they're probably going to be horribly weak in other areas.
Okay. And is your approach, I know we're getting right into some heavy philosophical stuff, which I can't get enough of, especially with you, but is your approach to maximize strengths or minimize weaknesses?
What it's turned out to be is maximize weaknesses and minimize strengths, because the fewer strengths you have, the more you're going to put into that one thing that you do. And I'd rather have one thing that I'm incredibly good at than 50 things that I'm okay at. You know, that's just my kind of feel on it. Is I have so many things that I'm horrible at. My friends kind of laugh at me just because there's a lot of imbalance. And that is a thing that I've just recently kind of started to accept that, hey, you know what? I don't need to be good at things that I'm not interested in.
So go back to college, because this is going to paint the picture of how and why and who you are as a man and a practitioner. But so go back to college. What did you study, and walk us through that?
My degree was actually in aerospace physiology, which I know doesn't have much to what I'm doing now, much connection. But when I was in school, there was, yes, I studied the materials that I was supposed to be studying. And usually I read the book in the first week. It would be a thing where I was really actively wanting to.
You liked it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the subject material. I never missed a class. I'd always be in class. This is, again, going to sound a little different, but I had a policy of taking one piece of paper to class for the entire quarter, semester, whatever it was.
That
was my entire. I was not permitted to take any more notes except one piece of paper. That's what I allowed myself. And so
I knew you were weird, but that's putting it
the
over
reason
the top.
Why
okay, good, good.
Because that forced me to pay attention. And I think people scribble a bunch of notes when the professor is talking and they aren't actually actively listening to the professor. And I found that I was much better off being engaged than scribbling a million notes and paying half attention to what the person's saying and writing the rest of the time. And so, yes, if there were key big words that I was going to need to know, I write that down. There were a few classes where I wished I had more pieces of paper because it was diagonal writing by the end of it and fitting things into tiny spaces. But I still have all my notes from college, and it was just each class had one piece of paper.
Do you design your life with forcing functions like that? Like compression of resources to get the most out of your time?
It's just, I found it to be more effective because honestly, if you look at a professor's face and think about it, if you're a professor and you're teaching a subject, when you get to something that you think is important, you're going to light up a little bit. And I'd rather be looking at the professor, see when the professor's face lights up and go, hey, this is important what he or she is saying right now, and take a note off of that, even if it's just a couple of words I've written down, because this is a key point instead of some useless information that everyone's just frantically writing.
Okay. Go back to the question, though. Do you use forcing functions?
Well, yeah, so as far as forcing, boy, I hadn't processed that until you're asking about it. I guess I do put myself in situations where, you know, for a lot of people, when they go on a vacation, they want to have a relaxing time, go get pampered and massaged and whatever. And I think for my vacations, I usually plan things that are off-road expeditions into the middle of nowhere where there's going to be hardship and, you know, a week of depending on your own skills to survive. And when I come back, I feel totally refreshed. It's one of those things where I'm like, wow, running water and microwaves. And you're fascinated with all the little things that you didn't have. And it makes you really appreciate things. So I guess in that case, I am kind of creating an environment artificially that has now put me in a survival situation that I wouldn't have been in otherwise.
Okay. And I'm going to add to this. There was a time when you were struggling with one part of life. Okay. And you said, Mike, if I don't get this done, when I say struggling, it's like,
oh, no, this isn't going to be the stab myself in the leg part, is it?
If I don't get this done by the end of the week, I need you to promise to me that you're going to stab me in the leg. So that's a forcing function, but no, I never put the themes together for you, but do you create that as a way?
Well, and it's one of those things where some of the things I've tried to use to motivate myself have not worked. And this is where I've declared that imbalance is just part of the thing I'm going to have to accept, because there have been times where I've bought a new TV, a new computer, something, and I've put it aside and said, okay, when I do this, then I could open the box. And I have had things that have been in boxes for a very long time.
Yeah, stabbing you in the leg. Well, did I agree?
You did, but then you failed to actually execute.
I got it done.
So it was.
You did get it done. Yeah. Okay. All right. Good. All right. So then, aerospace physiology.
Yeah.
You had an intense way of learning.
Yeah. And with the, so let's say the first week I read the book, I went to every class and I wrote my one page of paper over the whole semester. Because I was engaged in the class, there wasn't really studying that I had to do outside of that. And I found myself in the stacks, which nowadays they don't have the same arrangement in the library, but where there would be all the journals, and I'd just go digging through journals that had nothing to do with the class I was in.
And you know what's funny? I did the same thing. I've never even thought to talk about this ever before, but I didn't do the one-page thing. That absolutely sounds ridiculous to me, but no, but I get it. I'm laughing with you. But I would, at the university library, there's time between classes or whatever, and I just find myself being absorbed reading journal articles, and it was almost like this amazing, I sound like a total nerd, but it was amazing trail of information that kept pulling me in different directions. And yeah. I'd have to go to A journal, B journal, C journal. So you had the same thing?
Yeah, I would spend hours in the library just reading, you know, whether it was some of the Soviet sport-related things at the time, things that were not, they were off the beaten path, and I just wanted some different perspectives on the topic.
Right out of school, what did you do? Out of college?
Through college, I was a personal trainer, so that was how I kind of, had some spending money and whatever. The original plan was to go into the space program, and that was part of the reason I got the aerospace physiology background. The space program thing didn't work out, but the part of it that was useful was a lot of these things that, as far as the research side of it, if you're looking at things that affect muscle mass in a microgravity environment, if you can preserve muscle mass without gravity, you've got all the things in place to put on muscle in a training environment. So it translated really easily into the sports performance side of it. All those things that have to do with nervous system function, everything kind of carries over to an athlete-oriented territory. And so it was a really easy fit. And especially I knew a few athletes from when I was a personal trainer. I kind of started working with some of them. Next thing you know, it's just taken off. And I've really ended up in different territory because I don't work with a whole lot of normal people. I love working with normal people more than the athletes, actually. But it's just a thing where I've backtracked into normal people from the athletic world.
Okay, I want to talk to you about a new sponsor right here, Hydro. I love what they're doing. They are awesome. I don't know if you're into rowing like I am. I really enjoy it. What I try to do is I try to move around different cardio exercises. Sometimes on a bike, sometimes I'm rowing, sometimes I'm outside. But when I want to row, they've got it dialed in. They've done something fundamentally different than all the other rowers. One, it's not this loud machine that is making a ton of noise and, you know, chains slapping all over the place. They've done this in a really slick, premium, elevated way. And then the other thing they've done is that there's a nice screen that you can have a guide or a coach with you. And their coaches are Olympians and world-class athletes. And what they've done is they're filming, full stop, they are filming all over the world on places where their experts are rowing, and then you get to go with them. And they're coaching you the whole way. I love it. My favorite coach by far is Mac. She's great. And I just want to encourage you to give them a shot. If you love rowing, I think you're going to love this machine. And if you're not into rowing, I don't know if you know this, but rowing, there's been some research around rowing that rowing engages over 80% of your muscles while you're doing it. So it's a really efficient exercise. This spring, join the growing rowing community at Hydro. Head over to hydro.com and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's hydro.com, HYDROW.com, and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400. Hydro.com, use the code MASTERY. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AG1. It's really important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for almost a decade now, I've been drinking AG1. When I first was connected with them, I thought, oh, this is great. This is great. And then I double-clicked to understand their process and how they went about it. And I just love the rigor that goes into what they're creating and the product that they have. And they've gone through so many iterations to get it just right, 52 of them to be exact. Sometimes quality can be a buzzword, but they are committed. They are fundamentally committed to have a great product for us. They're interested in absorption. They're interested in high quality manufacturing. They rigorously test their product. So I trust what's in AG1. And one of the reasons I have extra confidence in that statement is they are NSF certified for sport. That's one of the most rigorous independent quality and safety certification programs in the supplement industry. They've made it so easy as well. What I do every morning is I take a scoop, put it into a cup of water, shake it up, and it's the first thing that I put in my stomach. I love it. It just gives me the sense like, okay, I've invested in my health and I haven't even started my day yet. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, I want to encourage you to go check out AG1. So try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/findingmastery. Again, that's drinkag1.com/findingmastery. I hope you will check them out.
We've spent a lot of time in some pretty intense environments, Red Bull, Seattle Seahawks. Talk about some of the other projects and places that your other clubs or individuals that you're working with that you're permitted to talk about.
Yeah, on the sports team side of it, it's kind of the NFL, it's really taken off. So that's a huge number of NFL teams are running their players through this testing.
How many?
Boy, that's a good question. 11 teams.
11 teams in the NFL are using your competitive nutritional analysis. Yeah. I love it. Kinda.
I know, with the Seahawks, you had some your team.
Okay, because you know, like I think the Seahawks was probably your first, right?
And then actually,
don't try to back out of it now.
No, that's true. Yeah, that was the first team application. I worked with a ton of football players, but as far as the whole team, that was the first application.
Yeah.
The NFL is constantly evolving, and it's one of those things where everyone's looking for what can they do different than the other guy to stay at the top.
Okay, and then so keep going.
As far as the teams,
yeah, just like it's fun to like reflect on some really cool places and experiences you've had.
Yeah, and I think it's in the team environment. There's the team can't mandate that people take the test, and so it's a thing where it has to be voluntary. And so if you get the leaders of the team to buy in, it's interesting the psychology behind it, because then you have the other people on the team begging to do the test. Which if it was flipped around the other way and it was a mandated thing, you'd have everyone just not even wanting any part of it. But it's, you know, they're wanting the same thing that the team leaders are doing. So I think that kind of goes into the tribe mentality.
And then as well as with, how many Olympic athletes, I think, gold medalists or medalists.
Yeah. I stopped counting on that, but it was, I think the last time I counted, it was right around 20 Olympic sports. I know it's over that now, so
awesome.
Where I've had a gold medalist.
Yeah.
But again, that's a territory where, you know, if you're looking at a 100-meter sprint, the difference between that first place and second place person is going to be much less than 1%. And it's just, from a marketing perspective, if someone said, hey, I'm going to have you do this thing that's really expensive and it's going to make you 1% better, that doesn't sound like a good plan. But in this world, that's the 1% is everything.
How did you go from a nerd? I'm glad we're both laughing, but like, seriously, like you're nerdy about this stuff. Like, how did you go from a nerd who wanted to read a lot and understand deeply to having an interest in exercise science and movement and training to crack your first client, to build a business on it, and then to move into the elite performer stage phase? Like, how did that happen for you? Because right now you've got a really super successful business based on what you've taught me about, like education, assessment, and basically you own a kitchen that you customize meals for people.
Yeah, so with the meal side of it, we're using a bunch of different kitchens. So let's say with the sports teams, we'll have meals prepared for the athletes. A lot of those are on site with the team. It's prepared to specification. So for each player, I've put software together where the information from that blood test gets imported into the software. We're crunching the numbers, putting together, okay, this person's deficient in beta carotene, so they're going to get more carrots and red bell peppers and sweet potatoes and, you know, the things that are going to fall into that, supplying that nutrient. So the meals are prepared specific to the individual. That's a secondary side of it with the nutritional blood testing, is the kind of getting that baseline. And for a lot of athletes, that's all they, you know, you give them the information and go through it and they're going to go apply it, and that's, it works great.
So, for a normal sized, and again, I don't even know what normal is, I'm just thinking average human, male or female, what would be the cost if they were going to buy on let's say weekly basis, if they're going to go out and buy the food to have a healthful nutritional plan, what would be that cost? And then what would be the cost if they're buying it from you? That is, like, if you're supposed to have 13 stalks of asparagus a week, that someone in your kitchen is measuring and weighing 13 stalks and making sure I or somebody gets it. By the way, I love, this sounds like a cheesy endorsement, but I wouldn't have you on if I didn't believe it. I'm better when I'm on your program, flat out. And so what is the cost difference, though, between those two variants that I just talked about?
With the food program, we're just charging a flat $15 per meal. So that's
it's not based on weight?
No. And so because most of the expense is on the labor side of it, because it is in gram weights that what we're generating with the software. And so the chefs are having to weigh each meal out. And whether it's a small meal or a large meal, you're still weighing out the ingredients, which just takes time.
Okay. So that's not that expensive. I mean, it's expensive. It adds up if you're doing four or five meals. You know, it adds up quickly. But is it that much different than if I'm going to go cook it and the labor involved? And I don't like cooking. I'm not good at it. I don't like it. I don't want to learn it. I love you, Lisa, but she's the same. So we're not good. We're not good on this side of it from a family structure.
Yeah, and so with the, you could do it on the cheap, just by making better choices when you're in the market as far as which things are on sale and all. You know, I was kind of putting the effort in. I couldn't tell you what the exact price would be on that end. Some things are expensive. Let's say grass-fed beef, the cost just adds up.
Do you use grass-fed?
Yeah. With the grass-fed beef, yeah, the cost adds up. Dealing with organic turkey or chicken or other things, it just becomes more expensive. From a health point of view, there's certain nutrients that are in things where you have to weigh, okay, well, what is the nutrient value versus what is the negative impact? So let's say with kale, I don't want to destroy anyone's love of kale in the audience, but with the sports teams, what I found is that the more kale that someone consumes, the higher their heavy metal tests will come back. And it's not that kale itself is toxic in some way. It's just that kale does a really great job of pulling everything from the soil. So as far as the mineral,
it's like a little chelation.
Well, it just, if you've got magnesium or whatever it is in the soil, it will pull that. But it's also, these heavy metals, these are naturally occurring things.
Look at that. So it's also pulling arsenic.
Yep.
Aluminum.
And so arsenic,
mercury.
Cadmium, not so much the mercury that I see, but
is mercury in soil?
You don't see that from a kale exposure thing. Fish is
more
usually
fish,
gonna be, with the arsenic and cadmium, that's actually one of the first questions I ask is when I see a high score there is how much kale do you eat?
Kale and quinoa.
And that's what you're eating?
Well, yeah, until you coach me up on it.
Okay.
And so now it's just every once in a while I'll have some kale.
Yeah.
Yeah, instead of regular basis. Okay, all right. Yeah,
and it's not that kale, like if kale was grown in soil that didn't have those things, that would be great. But even on the same farm, you may have some parts of the farm that have it and other parts that don't. And it's not something that any farmer is going to know. It's not the farmer's fault. It's just the part of the natural environment to have these things in the earth's crust.
So if we're based in California in the United States, if somebody is in France, they obviously can't use your kitchen but they could get your blood test.
You could do that properly. We've even done it with people in Australia. So that's,
shared client. Right? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay, good.
So, it's not.
Remember how bad that one was? They don't know who we're talking about, because we've shared so many clients. Remember how bad that test was?
There's been tests have been all over the place with the.
Yeah. And the couple people I'm thinking of that have had really bad tests were exceptional athletes.
Yeah, I know.
No names.
No, I'm going to go with one of the guys in the boxing program that Mike and I were involved in. He came back.
Heavyweight boxing program.
Yeah, heavyweight boxers. They were trying to create the next heavyweight champ. And this kid was a really great fighter for a couple of rounds. And then he'd be gassed. And it was a thing where initially he did everything possible to fight against making any nutritional changes. And then slowly but surely he started asking a couple of questions and, if I was just going to take one supplement, what would it be? And, it finally eased into him doing a nutritional test. And his test came back with, if he listens to this, he's going to laugh because he's going to know who I'm talking about. But it's a thing where he came back with some major needs. And Mike was present when I went through his test, and it was a thing where, he basically said, look, I'm just going to do what you tell me to do. If you give me food, I'm going to eat the food. And over the next 8 weeks, it was just fascinating what happened to him, because with no change in his exercise routine, he ended up putting on close to 15 pounds of muscle. He got totally ripped. He was a nightmare for everyone else in the boxing program because he went from struggling after two rounds, like everyone kind of knew you just stay away from him for the first couple of rounds, then go after him. And he was trash talking for eight rounds and a huge change in personality.
That was a really fun project that we worked on. Yeah. That athlete for sure. Okay. What's the hardest thing you've been through?
Hardest thing. Back in 2011, I had a interesting visit to the doctor for a checkup. So that was something where I didn't think there was anything wrong with me. And someone had asked, well, the technician said, oh, have you had an echocardiogram done? Which in college, I was actually the guinea pig for electrocardiogram stuff. They would hook me up every Tuesday and Thursday in lab. So I knew what my electrocardiogram looked like, but I had never had an echocardiogram. And they said, well, you know, we should do this just as a precautionary thing. Yeah, sure, whatever. And you could tell by the technician's face, you know, they can't tell you anything based on what they're seeing, but the technician's face, like her jaw kind of dropped and she was just moving the thing back and forth over my chest with a look of shock. I'm like, uh-oh. I said, what's wrong? And she goes,
wait, before you tell me, what was your response in that moment? Because you're good at reading people's micro expressions. You saw that she was concerned. What was your first impulse?
I was thinking, well, I don't want to start getting anxious about this because she's looking at my heart. I don't want to have a response that's going to make my heart's behavior change. And so there's a lot of thinking that was going into having a calming effect at the same time processing what her reaction was. And, you know, it was a thing where...
So you were almost tipping into like a panic, an anxious, panicky state.
It was a very relaxed panic where I was trying to keep myself in a relaxed space, but having a feeling of something is not right. And so when I asked her, you know, is everything okay? And she said, yeah, I'm just trying to get every angle of this so they could see this later, which not what you want to hear.
And oh my so, God. Yeah.
Oh. Afterwards, when the doctor came in, she told me, you know, don't put your shirt back on yet. The doctor's going to want to check you, whatever. So I'm in jeans, no shirt. And, you know, I'm not sounding overconfident here, but, you know, I've got a six pack looking good, kind of feeling like I was king of the world at the time, just from a training perspective. And the doctor came in, looked me up and down, looked at some charts, flipped some papers, and turned around and walked out of the room. And a minute later came back, looks at me. He said, you know, he asked me who I was just to make sure he had the right person, because I guess he was expecting me to look very different based upon what had just been uncovered on this echocardiogram. You know, it turns out that my aorta was, the average aorta is about 1 inch around, and mine was 3.5 inches around, the entire upper curve of the thing. And that my heart had apparently adapted over decades, I guess, just from not having that valve function properly at the top of the ventricle. And it just increased the stroke volume year after year after year. And I always found cardio was a little hard to do, but I just thought everyone hates doing cardio. It's hard for everybody. And I had no idea that there was anything that was different. And apparently it's just something that's been like that, you know, for, you know, most of my life. The concern there was that now that they knew about that, that it could burst. And it was a thing where the night before I went in for this test, I had lifted heavy. I was doing bent over rows with 315. I had 70 pounds strapped to myself for pull-ups. If I was trying to burst my aorta, that would have been a good way to do it. And, you know, after the doctor brought up the fact that they wanted me to go straight to the ER, I'm just like, I can't go to, what are you talking about? I thought it was a joke. So I'm like, if my aorta was going to burst, it would have burst last night. So yeah, that was an interesting experience, being in a hospital bed. Basically, they kept me there for 6 weeks, waiting for, there were only a couple of doctors that were going to be able to do this surgery to replace my aorta. And it wasn't so much that people hadn't replaced aorta, you know, some span of the aorta. It was that it was right up against the rib cage. And so if someone starts cutting into the rib cage to go in there and do anything, they're going to nick it. And, you know, now you've got a major issue. And so that was a really, really tough span, because from my point of view, I was the same as I was before I walked in the door that day that the technician.
I remember during that phase, we were talking all the time and you're like, I feel fine.
Yeah.
But you're about to have major surgery.
Well, and that was it. And I just kept working. And I was having to review blood tests with people. They had no idea I was in a hospital bed. And I'm reviewing a blood test on the phone. And I, you know, when they're saying paging Dr. Watkins or whatever, I was having to mute the phone and work around all kinds of things to, you know, obviously it's a weird territory to be in when you're telling someone what they need to do to be healthy. But at the same time, there was some level of me thinking, well, how am I giving them advice when I'm super unhealthy right now? I'm in a hospital. And it doesn't sound good when your nutrition guy is about to go for open heart surgery.
Was this something you created, or was this something that was congenial and you're born with?
No one really was able to give me an answer on that. So that was a thing where it could have happened from some really heavy lifting. I don't know. But at the time, the doctor told me, oh, this is the end of you exercising and all this other stuff, which I was like, yeah, that's not happening.
So you just didn't give, you didn't give his medical guidance credence?
No, because I just figured I'm just going to have to work around this. And I know even when I was in the hospital, I needed a break from being in the hospital. They wouldn't let me leave because if I left, I was no longer an emergency case and they wanted to get me in right away. And I know this sounds really bad. My brother Matt and we look pretty similar. And I was going to slip the band off my wrist and have him stay for a day in the hospital so I could take a little break from it. My mom put an end to that pretty quickly. But
oh my God, dude.
Anyway, the surgery went fine. I know it was a thing where heading into it, the doctor was saying, well, you know, you have a 40% chance of making it out of this, which I don't know. I guess I kind of went in confident, being like, yeah, I'm going to make it out of this. And he said, even if you do make it out, you're not going to be the same, all this other information. And I'm actually better now than I was before I went in. I didn't even realize what I was missing as far as having the endurance side of things, just because that valve hadn't been working right for most of my life, apparently.
So they put a mechanical valve in.
Yeah, so the valve had to be replaced. The aorta was replaced. That was it.
Did you have an option to do cadaver, or did you want mechanical?
They could only do mechanical just because it was attached to that aorta, so they had to replace the whole unit.
I can hear your heart ticking.
Yeah, it makes a little bit of a tick noise.
And what is that like for you, to live with that ticking?
I mean, if it's really quiet, I guess it's something that I'll think through. A lot of times if I'm going into a business meeting or something, I'll throw a watch on just because you don't want someone to be like, what's that ticking noise? But
it's my heart.
But yeah, that was a tough stretch. I think partly because I didn't want to be hypocritical. And for me, giving advice to someone when now I have something that's wrong with me and I had to have, you know, this other person hasn't had open heart surgery and here I am having had open heart surgery. It felt really, even though I knew it wasn't a nutritional thing, it was the thinking in my head really interfered with my ability to do my thing. You know?
How did you work through that?
Boy, I think there wasn't really too much choice. I mean, it was a thing where I was doing what I loved. I didn't want to change that. It definitely was a bump in the road of, you know, how, like, if I was mapping out how my life is going to go, that was not part of the plan.
Are we talking about imposter syndrome?
What is that?
Like you felt like you were a phony?
It wasn't so much feeling like I was a phony. It was, especially if I saw someone with a blood test where they had a lot of cardiac-related markers come back on their test. With the elite athletes, it wasn't much of an issue. But with someone that I really had legitimate concern about their cardiac health, that's where I felt that maybe that what you're describing as far as the imposter thing, where I was thinking, well, I'm actually worse off than you are. And
yeah, so the imposter piece is like one day somebody's going to find out that I'm not what they think I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so how did you, do you tell people?
I brought it up on occasion because there's been some people who have had to, you know, something heart related come up and they're very shocked to find out that I had any background just because, you know, from their point of view, I'm, for my age, in pretty darn good shape. And
yeah, a picture of health.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so transparency was kind of part of it. And then it sounds like you just said, well, listen, it's either me get out of this field because I can't deal with this inner conflict, or just keep getting better, Chris. And
there was no getting out of it. It was just, I had to work through that on my end, just as far as how to give that advice where,
you know, how did you do it? This is the psychology piece.
Trying to think of what I did that was that I would pass along to someone else. That's a tough question.
Yeah. It's like pulling back on the process, but maybe you weren't quite sure what you did.
It might be more of what you would describe as fake it till you make it, except in that territory, I had to fake it until I made it a thing where I was comfortable with it.
Hmm. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Apollo Neuro. By now, you're probably well aware that I am a huge fan of what they're doing. I love what they're building and how they're using science-backed technology to help people flourish. This is just a great technology that isn't measuring something. It's actually providing a state change for you to help you either downregulate, find a deeper sense of calm, maybe fall asleep a little bit easier. And if you want to be bit more up and animated, they've got a way to help you do that as well. It's awesome. It works by sending silent, soothing vibrations. They call them Apollo vibes, of course. That's fun. And it's like music that you can just feel. Just like music, higher vibrations help improve your energy and focus, while lower vibrations, slower vibrations, help to reduce stress, help you relax. I use it twice a day. I use it after I do something really intense. So after it's a lift, after some fitness, after some sport, or after something I'm doing in the office. And I use it right before I go to bed. The science that they've found is fascinating. Across various real world and clinical trials, Apollo wearable users experience up to 40% less stress and feelings of anxiety. That's an average, of course. 19% more time in deep sleep, 11% increase in HRV, heart rate variability, and up to 25% more focus and concentration. Those are radical. And because you're a part of the Finding Mastery community, you're going to get an exclusive, and I mean that word here, 15% off an Apollo wearable. So just head to apolloneuro.com/findingmastery and use the code FINDINGMASTERY at checkout. This is an exclusive offer only available to Finding Mastery. I love that we get to do this together. So be sure to use our code. Again, APOLLONEURO, apolloneuro.com/findingmastery, or use the code Finding Mastery at checkout for 15% off your purchase. You're only getting that here. I really hope you'll check them out. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AquaTrue. We all know how important hydration is to performance and recovery and well-being. But it's not just about how much you drink. The quality of your water plays a big role. And if you're like me and you don't fully trust tap water, and I think for good reason, research by the Environmental Working Group has shown that 3 out of 4 homes in the U.S. have harmful contaminants in tap water. That's why I'm really excited to introduce AquaTrue. Their purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. It's incredible. I can literally taste the difference in my water. Plus, the filters are affordable and long-lasting. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That adds up to less than 3 cents per bottle. It feels great to know that all at once, I'm saving money, getting the highest quality water for the Finding Mastery team, and helping make a positive impact on the environment by eliminating single-use plastics all the way around. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and it even makes a great gift. And right now, because you're a Finding Mastery listener, you receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. So just go to aquatrue.com. You spell it AquaTru.com and enter the code Finding Mastery at checkout. Again, that's aquatrue.com. Enter the Finding Mastery code at checkout to receive 20% off any purifier that you buy there. How do your friends describe you, or your loved ones? Like, how do people describe you?
I'm sure they think I'm crazy. I don't know.
That fits. So I would say that too. Okay.
Well,
and then what is the, people don't talk about this, but we're kind of on the cusp of it. The dark side of being exceptional. And you are exceptional at your craft. Is there a dark side that you've had to wrestle with?
Well, I think that I've, in exchange for being good at what I do, you know, all those things I was talking about, min-maxing, I mean, the things that I don't do, I just am horrible at. I don't do at all. And it, a lot of it is even with, you know, business-related stuff, I'm just, you know, it's funny how I could be running a business and not good at business. I'm not good at sales, but I end up with a lineup of people just because I'm good at what I do.
Mm-hmm. How do you get in your own way, Chris?
Oh, I'm horrible at getting in my own way. If I'm actually shocked that I'm still in business, because it's a thing where I'm really good at what I do, but I also just whether it's staying on top of invoicing or just general business management and, you know, feeling bad for an employee that's really, you know, that probably shouldn't be part of the business anymore. Maybe some people have hung around longer than they should have.
You are hopeless when it comes to taking care of people in that way.
Yeah. And so, that's... as far as me getting in my own way, I think also taking on more projects than what I should, because I probably have enough, if I just focused on the nutritional side of things, that would be enough. But I, as you know, with things like Heaven Sent or whatever, where, you know, I come up with some idea of, hey, wouldn't it be great if, and then I'm off on something that's a 2-year full-time job of,
which are always really exciting and out there, and I love being part of them. So, you know, and which was Heaven Sent, which is, could we find you, this is your idea, not mine. Could we find somebody to jump out of a plane without a parachute into a, what at one point was going to be this really elaborate slide, you know, on the edge of the Grand Canyon. It was, we almost made that happen, but there was a slight shift in it. Luke Aikens ended up doing this into a net.
Yeah.
A 16 story net.
It was a thing where, Jimmy Smith had asked me to, he said, we're trying to put an event together. I said, you want an event? I'll give you an event. Give me a week to think about it.
Jimmy was on the Finding Mastery podcast as well.
Yeah.
On a previous episode. Yeah.
And so, I spent a week brainstorming the idea and came up with 5 ideas that I thought were, you know, pretty unique ideas. And one of my friends, we were at Dinah's restaurant, and I was just kind of saying, here's my ideas I came up with. And the first thing I threw out was Heaven Sent. And she said, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. And so it was a thing where, you know, it's all in one sentence. You know, someone's going to jump out of a plane at 25,000 feet with no parachute. And,
I think it's probably one of the dangerous projects I've worked on.
Yeah. And I know for you, that was kind of a tough one to...
it was extraordinary, but it was critically dangerous, obviously.
Well, and from my point of view, it was fascinating just because it's something that sounds impossible. It's completely doable. It was not a thing where I felt that it was as high risk as it sounded with all the safety precautions we put into place to guide him toward the target.
Okay, on that note, is there a philosophy that guides your life?
Boy, as far as philosophies, I think when it comes to nutrition, I've always had a policy of give away the information in that conversation. And that's probably where, you know, let's say on the sales side of it, my lack of salesmanship has been made up for by me feeling free to discuss anything nutritional. I think a lot of people in the field clench to everything they have because they think that's their trade secret. And there's so much information, no matter how much you give out in that initial conversation, there's 1,000 times more than that that's there that, with that initial conversation, though, it sets the precedent for that person wanting to have more contact with you.
Okay, so that's like your approach
to
business, really. But also your craft is give away as much as you can.
Yeah, I don't think that there's a...
You are a giver. Much more than a taker.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never have thought of you as a taker. So is there a word that cuts to the center of who you are as a man?
Boy, that's a tough one. I think with the, a big thing for me has recently just been embracing imbalance. And I think a lot of people are looking to be centered and kind of have all aspects of their life functioning at an efficient level. And I've pretty much accepted that there are some things that are just going to be a little off. And the things that I really enjoy and that I put my heart and soul into, to do those better than anybody on the planet. And, you know, I think that's how you leave your mark. Like you really do something exceptional, because there's a lot of people who aren't doing things that are exceptional and just kind of plod along through life, just doing what's expected of them, rather than, let's say with the 5 ideas that I came up with for that, event, I was trying to think of, okay, what sounds impossible? And then I'd jot that down, and then I'd think, well, how can I make that happen?
Is legacy important to you?
It hadn't been before, and I guess at this point, I'm realizing there's a certain amount of time in your life to do things, and setting up a business where it can function without you. And not necessarily that something bad happened to me. It's a thing where just making it so that the business can run and do the same thing that you're doing without you being involved in daily operations is, technology is becoming available that would allow that to happen. And that's fascinating territory.
Is there a word or a phrase that cuts to the center of what you understand most?
I think on the nutritional science side of it, when you're looking at a blood test, there's very few people that have seen as many tests as I've seen. And so that would be, if I'm picking one thing that I'm better at than I'd say anyone on the planet, it's going to be that territory.
Okay. Brilliant. If I asked again and you said my philosophy is, how would you finish that?
On a personal level, I think my point of view is, and I don't know who said this quote a long time ago, but I remember reading it and thinking that's interesting, but be nice to people on the way up, because they're the same people you're going to run into on the way down. And so it doesn't matter who I'm talking to, whether it's, a coach, a famous coach of a football team, or if it's a housewife that most likely doesn't have the financial resources to do the testing with me. I put the same love and effort into that conversation, no matter who it is.
Hmm. You've seen so many world-class athletes and performers and been part of their experiences. This is not a loaded question. I really want to know how you think about this. What percentage of success on the world stage is related to the mind?
Oh, that's a huge chunk of it. I think that if someone is going to perform at a world-class level, that you cannot get there without having the right, you have to be in the right mental space. I've seen a lot of athletes that have huge egos but aren't necessarily in the right space. And I don't know how much of that is phony or real, but it's just a thing where, for the mental side of it, even just to put in the dedication to making sure that they are eating right all the time. I mean, that's a lot of effort to put in. And, if you are going, I'm using Cheesecake Factory to pick on here, but if you're going to Cheesecake Factory with your family and it's someone's birthday, that athlete can make a good choice there. And it's just, they have to have the mental discipline to do that.
So what would you say the percentage of...
It's hard to put a percentage on that. I think it's a requirement more than
that's a cool thought. Yeah, that's a cool thought. And then now this is squarely in your lap of your expertise, is when you get the nutrition right, how does that impact the psychology?
All those things that are involved in production of, I'm going to use dopamine as an example, just because I'm finding that that's really key to athletic performance.
Motivation, mood stabilization.
Well, even just on a inhibition level of, if you're, let's say that you are a baseball player and you're up to bat and you've got a millisecond to make a decision on whether or not you're swinging on this pitch, all of those thoughts of what you're going to do and how you're going to swing are being somewhat suppressed so that you can stay there at the ready. And dopamine is unique just because it's what's allowing you to make that decision of which one of those actions is going to take place. And because I see so many athletes come back deficient in, let's say, vitamin B6, which is involved, it's necessary for production of dopamine. Tyrosine and phenylalanine are in that pathway. You have a lot of things that are feeding that pathway that if someone's in a really high-pressure situation for a long period of time, you'll see someone will end up depleted in those things. And in the athletic world, everyone refers to it as adrenal burnout, and that's not a scientific term, but it's a thing where because dopamine is used to produce norepinephrine and epinephrine, and that pathway to make those, you need copper and vitamin C, things that are common, no one really thinks about it. If you end up with deficiencies there, that pathway doesn't work like it should. And it's not, I would say, super common, but with really high level people that have pushed themselves hard, I find that that's a problem area more so than the general population.
Mm. Okay, brilliant. Okay, how about this? Pressure comes from?
That would just be my own expectations of myself. I put a ton of pressure on myself to, I guess, somewhat be a perfectionist, and it doesn't matter how many blood tests I've reviewed in a day. If it's the end of the day and I'm starting to fade a little bit, I've just got to rally and just give this person 100% of my attention, even if at the end of it I feel like I'm going to go pass out. It's just so I do put a lot of pressure on myself to give everyone the same amount of attention.
It all comes down to...
I think this is from you, but the way you do the little things is the way that you end up doing the bigger things.
Yeah, the way you do small things is the way you do all things. Yeah, so, very cool. Really? That has impacted you?
Yeah, I think that, and I don't think I heard that term before you said it, but it was a thing where I found that, especially with the athletes, you could tell who's got it together and who doesn't in a very short conversation. Mm. But I know for myself that applies too, is just if you're going to do something, do it right. And it seems to carry on to the bigger things.
How would you finish this thought? My vision.
So on a business side of things, that would be...
Yeah. If you said my vision, you would say...
Yeah. And this would just be a future look is where I'm going with that. I would say... The advent of artificial intelligence, I think, is going to change a lot of things in the nutritional realm. I think microfluidics are going to play a role in the nutritional realm. The combination of those two will be interesting. I know AI freaks me out a little bit just on a creating something that's more intelligent than. The smartest person on the planet right now is going into unique territory. And so it leaves me a little uncomfortable, but it's also, AI is amazing with huge sets of data. And so, as far as the vision there, it would be that if you could get a large number of people's nutritional blood tests and mine that and look for all those things where if this is high and this is low and something else is in the middle, what does that do to someone's testosterone? That day is here. I mean, it's a thing where you can use AI to do that type of research where you're actually advancing the field of nutrition faster than it has at any point in history. And I think in the next few years, actually, that there'll be some major, major bits of information coming out of that territory that were unknown before.
Mm. How would you answer this? I am.
These are hard questions. I think I'm pretty intense when it comes to my ideas, whether it's a guy jumping out of a plane with no parachute or, if I'm in, whether it's a practical joke or whatever it is, I'm in 100%. So I think there's probably a high level of intensity, even though my personality wouldn't seem like I'm an intense person from just someone interacting with me. They'd probably be like, he's pretty mellow.
last kind of zinger here, not zinger, but like a challenging question is, how do you articulate or define or think about the concept of mastery?
Mastery is kind of a unique territory because you, to be the best at something, which is kind of what I would consider to be a master of whatever it is, that thing that I was saying earlier about basically minimizing strengths and maximizing weaknesses really comes into play because, and this is not to say that the thing that you're strong at should be minimized, but making it so you've got one thing that you're incredible at, and you kind of have to let some other things go. Things that are not as important to you, just being willing to let those things go and focus on what is your main endeavor.
No one's ever said that. It doesn't surprise me that you say it, but no one's ever said that before. Huh. It's cool. Is there one characteristic or a key characteristic for mastery?
I think determination would be a big part of that. I don't think that, if you're talking about someone who's achieved a level of mastery on the football field versus someone that's achieved a level of mastery in the laboratory in a scientific setting, there's probably a similar determination that drives them. It's just a totally different way of applying it.
All right, that's it for part one. Hope you enjoyed getting to know Chris and what he stands for and his psychological framework. And I just want to nudge in, encourage you to hop over to part two, where we take a deeper dive into the mechanics of nutrition. And I think you'll enjoy it. I think you'll be surprised by some of the common misconceptions associated with a healthy diet. And we discuss a vegan diet, vegetarian diets, gluten-free diets, carbs, protein, testosterone levels, and all that stuff. So we've got it covered in this conversation. All right. Thank you so much for diving into another episode of Finding Mastery with us. Our team loves creating this podcast and sharing these conversations with you. We really appreciate you being part of this community. And if you're enjoying the show, the easiest no-cost way to support is to hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening. Also, if you haven't already, please consider dropping us a review on Apple or Spotify. We are incredibly grateful for the support and feedback. If you're looking for even more insights, we have a newsletter we send out every Wednesday. Punch over to findingmastery.com/newsletter to sign up. This show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors, and we take our recommendations seriously. And the team is very thoughtful about making sure we love and endorse every product you hear on the show. If you want to check out any of our sponsor offers you heard about in this episode, you can find those deals at findingmastery.com/sponsors. And remember, no one does it alone. The door here at Finding Mastery is always open to those looking to explore the edges and the reaches of their potential so that they can help others do the same. So join our community, share your favorite episode with a friend, and let us know how we can continue to show up for you. Lastly, as a quick reminder, information in this podcast and from any material on the Finding Mastery website and social channels is for information purposes only. If you're looking for meaningful support, which we all need, one of the best things you can do is to talk to a licensed professional. So seek assistance from your healthcare providers. Again, a sincere thank you for listening. Until next episode, be well, think well, and keep exploring.